Good morning, everybody. It's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. I'm proud to have with us as our guest today, Mr. Paul Benoit, city manager of the city of Astoria for another, 6 hours?
Yeah.
But Paul really is a true short-timer. He's moving on to another position in California, and we'll talk about that. Thanks for being with us, Paul.
Thanks for inviting me.
I'd like to start out with a little biographical information, like where did you grow up, where did you go to school, and then you were talking earlier about Saipan or somewhere.
Yeah, I'll try to give the short story, but I grew up in Rhode Island, and there are still a few people who pick that up in my accent, although I haven't lived in Rhode Island since about 1977. I born, raised there, went to University of Rhode Island, thought I was going to be an oceanographer. I wasn't, but I stayed in environmental sciences. I wanted to go to get my master's degree. I have an undergraduate in botany and natural resources management. I wanted to go to graduate school. I applied to several schools around the country and was accepted into a couple of them, but the one that was most intriguing was University of Washington. When you grow up in New England and you take out the map and see Puget Sound and the Olympic Mountains and the cat, it just looks like a very cool place. So that's where I went, and that's what got me west. And I graduated from UW in 78, 79, around that time. Did a little stint as a foreign fisheries observer in the Bering Sea. I was in Alaska.
Well, I've heard that story, and I wanted you to tell that story again. Something about down in the hold, throwing fish around or something.
Yeah, we'd run out of time. Yeah, but I worked in the Korean stern trawling fleet. I was hired by the National Marine Fisheries Service. It was just a 2-month stint, but you're at sea the whole time.
As an observer.
But they, you do statistical work, figuring out what they're catching and how much they're catching. And so the National Marine Fisheries Service ran us all through, 2 weeks of training. And in that training, you learn how to identify fish and how to figure out gross tonnage. And, everything you want to know about the fish they're catching and how to radio back to to Seattle. But they never told you anything about how a factory ship works or what it's like to be the only English speaker on a Korean ship of 110 crewmen. So the cultural part you had to learn. And I had no concept that every time they hauled their net in, there'd be 70, 80 metric tons of fish in that net. And I'm just used to fishing around here. And I remember my first time on the ship, and you're supposed to do the statistical work where you get random samples of the catch with kind of oversized laundry baskets. Mm-hmm. And I told the Korean people in the factory, kind of with sign language, that I needed to get in the hold so I could catch the fish when they're coming out of the net, because National Fisheries told us that the fish sort in the net, depending on their size and shape, so you don't get a good random sample if you take all the fish at the front end of the net. So they're all talking Korean when, helping me lift me up over the boards to get into the hold and handing my baskets over. And then I'm sitting there, I'm just standing there holding my laundry basket, waiting for the fish to come, which seems all stupid, but no one told me. And that I see the hydraulic door coming down on the deck, sunlight cracking through, and looking up through there, and I see this fisherman on the deck, a deckhand, climb this net like a ladder. He probably went up 13, 14 feet. And I realize that that's the diameter of this net that's like 100 feet long. And he pulls the end, and it starts popping like a purse string. And it was Niagara Falls of fish. In a blink of an eye, my basket was gone. The fish was coming up to my knees, my waist. And it was so fast because I was like under the waterfall, and I had chest waders, and fish are going down my chest waders. And the Koreans are realizing that I don't know what the heck I'm doing. So they're quickly taking the boards off the weir. The fish are spilling over the factory floor. They're hauling me out. But actually, it was the best icebreaker. I would recommend it for any observer on it. From that day, they knew I was just like them. Just a poor schmuck caught on a fishing boat in Alaska, and I had lifelong friends, still have friends in Korea from that time, which probably wouldn't have happened if I had stayed the observer scientist. But that's that story.
Well, we'll talk about some of your activities here in Astoria in a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit about your new job. moving to Piedmont, California. Piedmont means at the base of the hill or base of the mountain, and it comes from the Italian area of Piedmont. But my understanding and my recollection, having lived down there, is that Piedmont is up on the hill. It's not at the base of the hill.
Correct. Yeah, it's up. People are familiar with the Bay Area. It's in Oakland. I mean, Piedmont is surrounded by Oakland. It's like a donut hole in Oakland. It's up near the Berkeley campus, your alma mater.
Well, fortunately for you, then, you'll be able to look out the window and see the University of California.
I will.
Golden Bears.
But, yeah, it's up pretty high. It's up at the top of the ridgeline.
Can you see the campanile?
The bell tower there? When I was there, I was so focused on what I was doing, I didn't notice. Uh-huh. So I'll let you know. I'll email. But it is very close proximity. But, you know, San Francisco is, you know, 15 miles away. Berkeley's a couple miles away. It's going to be an interesting experience.
What was your interview process like there?
You know, it was funny because I was actually this whole concept just came upon me suddenly. I mean, I was not looking to leave Astoria, but I don't know, something just came over me, and
maybe greed.
No, it honestly wasn't that. I love what I'm doing here. I've been fortunate. Last time I left, as you remember, it was hard to leave.
Yeah,
you know, it was just this city's been great for me. And the second time around as city manager, it's the same thing. But I don't know, I sand in my shoes. I've been here almost 9 years as city manager. That's the longest run of any city manager except for Dale Curry. And we've had city managers since the 1920s. So good time to leave. But I was interviewed being simultaneously by two cities. I applied to two places I got interviewed into, and it just turned out that they were happening in the same week. So it was really difficult because you try to study and learn all you can about each and get your facts straight so that when you get interviewed, I'm not. So I was interviewed in Monterey and Piedmont. In Piedmont, it was kind of interesting. I was interviewed first by the city council, which are a really nice group of people. I mean, I synced well with them, kind of like our city council. I mean, friendly, mm-hmm. committed people. And then I went directly. Well, then that was on a Friday, and they said, hang around. We'll let you know on Saturday if we want to interview you on Monday. So they had four candidates that they had narrowed it down to. And I got the call, obviously, that they wanted to interview me again. And I was interviewed by the department heads first, so the management team of the city, and then by the city council. And a week later, there was no citizen group. It was just the, you know, management group, city council. And on a couple days later, I got a phone call in the evening from the mayor, vice mayor, and their city attorney. And they made an offer, which I accepted.
Well, Piedmont is a very, as I recall, very wealthy, very upscale little town, is it not?
Extremely. It's almost breathtaking. But, I mean, it's interesting because it was largely, like Astoria, it was largely built out by the turn of the century. Hmm. So, as I understand it, and I've read a little bit about it, but in the 1890s, you know, turn of the century, the wealthy San Franciscans, because in the summertime, San Francisco was cold and foggy, and probably in the early 1900s, it was muddy and wet. So if you had money, you went up to the sunny side of the bay on the east side, and
what's
you
that
built
Mark
up a
Twain quote, the coldest winter I ever spent was the summer in San Francisco.
Yeah, and that's really, I can see that. I remember when I was living in Alameda, and it'd be bright, sunny, blue sky, and you look across the bay to San Francisco, and all you see is the Transamerica Tower, you know, the popping out of the fog, mm-hmm. you know. And now, you know, I've even forgotten the question that you asked me there about it being a wealthy community. But San Franciscans built, the wealthy ones, built estates in Piedmont. And they incorporated in 1920. And I think they incorporated it to prevent Oakland from annexing them. So they became their own community, about 11,000 people.
Hmm. I've been handed a question. This happens often during my show. This question asks, what is a city manager, and where does it fit in with the mayor?
Really?
Yeah, you can look at it here.
Well, that's an interesting question. Actually, the profession of city management started in the 1920s, and I think it was a reaction to some of the ugly politics that were happening back east and in Chicago, where elected officials were hiring brothers-in-law and giving contracts to friends and family.
Yeah, it's the American way.
Yeah, well, and so, but the city manager profession, it's actually a profession. You can go to school and get a graduate degree, a master of public administration, which I didn't do. I didn't take that track. But so cities, most cities in the U.S. have a city manager. The city manager is like the CEO, the chief executive officer. So in a city, you know, the city manager is responsible for all the day-to-day business of the city. All of the employees report, usually not directly. For instance, the police will report to the chief, but the chief reports to the city manager. City manager has sole responsibility for hiring, firing, and city operations. Council sets policy and direction. So, again, using the corporate model, the council would be like the board of directors. So the council, in most cities, the council has two or three employees. City manager, usually a judge if they have a municipal court, and the city attorney are traditionally always employees of the city council. City
right, councils that's the case
can,
here.
Yeah, that's the case here. And the city council could tell me tomorrow, they don't have to give me notice, that you're fired, or we'd like you to start looking for another job. and that's traditional. That's sort of across the country. But that separates, it keeps sort of cities running in a more professional manner. But the council, you know, directs, sets the policy, and hires the person that they think best fits with the city.
Well, a city manager then in Piedmont, how many employees will you be directing?
About the same as Astoria. It's about 110, a little over 100 employees. City's a little bigger than Astoria. It's about 11,000 people. But it's interesting that it's uniquely single-family residential. They don't have a downtown. The only commercial, there's four banks and Mulberry's Market, a little grocery store. But you descend out of Piedmont, and in 5 minutes, you're in Oakland, Temescal, Rock Ridge, Berkeley. Mm-hmm. So there's no coffee shops. There's no restaurants. It's single-family residential.
5 minutes from the ghetto.
No, you know, actually, people think that, but, well, if you drive fast, maybe you'd be 5 minutes. But you get up in the hills of Oakland, and, you know, there's amazingly beautiful neighborhoods. I mean, it's really, you know, beautiful. But you get down into lower Oakland or East Oakland, West Oakland.
That's the part I was thinking of.
Yeah. Is that where you live when you were?
Actually, I live several places, but most of the time was in El Cerrito.
Oh, on the other side of the hill.
Yeah. No, it's north of Berkeley. But it's alongside the bay.
Right.
Yeah. Now, clearly, you're not going to be able to afford to live in Piedmont. Have you got a place where you live?
I will not be able to live in Piedmont. And they have no expectation that city employees would live there. Not that they wouldn't like it. They just know that it's not affordable there. There's, you know, $15, $20 million homes there. And their school district is like the 10th best in the country. And so people want to live there, and I don't have kids in school anymore. But no, I do not have a place to live. I'm actually heading down that way tomorrow. The thing in the Bay Area that I learned last time I was there, so at least I'm going with the right frame of mind. I won't be as frustrated. But if you want to buy real estate there, it's first to get a two-bedroom, one-bath home, you're looking $600,000, $700,000. But the way they sell homes there in the Bay Area is they'll have an open house, stage it, make it look pretty, and make it smell like cookies are in the oven. And they'll show it on Saturday, like from 2 to 4, and accept bids on Monday. And people bid. They bid it up, mm-hmm. You know. And apartments aren't that different. They'll, on a rental, they'll do an open house, and you submit your applications. People sometimes submit pictures of their dog or their kids and write a resume, which I've never done, you know, and I don't want to do, but it's hard. If you want to live in that area in a nice, safe place, it's, you know, there's 7 million people to compete with.
That's for sure. You see them all on the freeway.
Yeah, when I describe that, people say, "Well, why are you going?" But you know, there's a vibrancy and liveliness to that place, and you know, Astoria and I'm going on with questions you haven't asked, so you're the host here. But this city's been great to me and my family. I mean, it's been the best place to live and the best job I could have asked for. I have no regrets. I'm not leaving with it's actually kind of nice to leave with really good feelings about a place. You know, sometimes I talk to other city managers, you know, and they just can't wait to go, or the community can't wait for them to go, you know, one or the other. And this I'm doing sort of by choice, and at a time where I think the city's just running really well. I know people will debate that, but we have a really strong staff. You know, our projects have gone well. Financially, we're stable again. We, you know, a few years ago we weren't. So, but it's a good time for me to pass it on.
And it's also a good time for me to do our mid-show break, where I announce this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN KTCB, and it's Friday with Jim, and I'm happy to be visiting with a very, very short-term city manager, Paul Benoit, who is leaving us at the end of the day, actually, and heading, are you driving down tomorrow to California?
Flying down.
Yeah, flying down. Now, when you first came to Astoria, as I recall, didn't you work for Crest?
Yeah, I was actually living on the island of Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands, and I was there working in coastal zone management, environmental management for about 3.5 years. My son, Daniel, who's now 31, was born there. And when he was about 6 months old, my wife thought it was time to come back into the country. So we were looking, and again, there was no internet. You're 10,000 miles away. It's hard to job search. But we were interested in the East Coast, Northeast or Northwest. And I had a friend who actually I went to graduate school with, who was working at CREST, the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force. Mm-hmm. And just via snail mail, he sent me an announcement that they were going to be recruiting for a new director. Mike DeLappa was a director before me. He was leaving. And I applied. I got the job. And I moved here in 1983 and was CREST director for about 3.5 years. And Gene Hallow at the time was the planning director.
I remember Gene.
Yeah, and Gene worked for Dale Curry. Dale Curry was the city manager at the time.
Dale Curry.
Yeah, you've been here a long time. And I did a lot of work for this. CREST does a lot at the time, did a lot of work for all the governmental jurisdictions on both sides of the river.
Yep,
Pacific County, Ukiah County. And you were on the board, weren't you?
I was on the board then, yes. And I'm doing some contract work for CREST right now, some habitat restoration stuff.
I heard rumor about that. And it's an organization that's had a lot of longevity. It started in the 1970s. So I was a director, 83 to 86. Did a lot of work for the city of Astoria. I worked at the time with Reimar Bartle, and who was he and Mike Morgan, who's the mayor of Cannon Beach now, worked for CTIC, the Clatsop Tillamook Intergovernmental Conference. It was a COG, they call it. And together we were doing some planning work for Astoria, and we were working on riverfront access. That was 1983, 1984, and that's where kind of the concept of the Riverwalk developed. And I made presentations to the city council as a CREST director. And when Gene retired, the city manager, who was Jim Flint at the time, asked me to apply. And, you know, I was interviewed and competed and got the job. That was, again, 1986, and I did that job till 2003. So it was 17 years.
And that's when you became city manager?
Yeah. I became assistant city manager. My title in my last 3 years, like that 2000, 2003, was community development director, assistant city manager. 2003, I left. I was recruited and went to Alameda, California. Again, it's an island in San Francisco Bay. I worked there for 3.5 years. I was assistant city manager. I was development director and then assistant city manager in Alameda. And then Dan Bartlett, who was a city manager here at the time, retired. And city council, again, was recruiting. They used the League of Oregon Cities to do the recruitment. And I applied and was hired and came back. And that was 2006.
One of the things that's really striking about your tenure here, and you mentioned it briefly, is the Riverwalk. kind of walk us through how that came about and your participation in that process.
You know, I mentioned, you know, in graduate school, my graduate degree was in coastal zone management. And in the 70s, remember the Oregon Beach Bill, Tom McCall, access to beaches and
yes.
public ways was just a very big deal. And in graduate school, in graduate seminars, it was a big topic of conversation about the privatization of riverfronts and the privatization of beaches and how important it was to preserve public access. So that I was kind of well steeped in that just as a student. Went to Saipan, came to Astoria, and looked at our riverfront, and the Burlington Northern Railroad controlled it. There were the most of the big seafood processors, Castle and Cook, you know, the Elmore Cameron had closed. So you had these behemoth, cool old buildings out on piling that there was nothing happening. They were vacant. And the riverfront, you know, at the time I was 29, 30. It was kind of a cool place for young, I mean, older people, or at night it might feel dangerous, but if you're young and you don't care, it doesn't feel dangerous. But it wasn't accessible, and it was controlled by an entity that was far from Astoria, the Burlington Northern Railroad. So I, you know, because of my background and education, I just had a real focus and interest on that and began working on concepts for how we would do it. Began contacting the Burlington Northern Railroad, who said, no, you know, we will not sanction or formalize access. They have their corridor, the railroad controlled, owned 50-foot strip, 25 feet either side yeah. of the center line of the railroad tracks for the entire length of Astoria and on to Portland. You know, but just kind of jumping forward to something as when I began working for the city, I just had a real strong interest in. And at the time, Bud Forrester, Steve Forrester's father, was the editor, publisher of the Daily Astorian. And for whatever reason, I never knew what the connection was, but he was friends with the president of the Burlington Northern Railroad. Hmm. And once a year, I think the guy's name was Breslin or Bresler, but once a year he would come to Astoria and Bud and he would go salmon fishing. And I had a good relationship with Bud and we were talking about my interest in the riverfront. And he said, oh, I have a friend, you know, and he told me about that. So he broached the subject with the president of the Burlington Northern Railroad. And as it turned out, I'm making the story really brief and it was probably a lot more complex, but Hatfield, Senator Hatfield was in the Senate, very strong Oregon senator. Burlington Northern had interests across the country and they were very reticent to do anything that would upset Senator Hatfield by abandoning rail lines in Oregon. When they realized that maybe a short line, which extends from Portland to Astoria, you know, at least Astoria had an interest in them leaving town. They began talking with us more seriously, and we had the support of Senator Hatfield to do that. So we ended up rail banking. And I, again, from graduate school, I was aware of the National Trails Act, which allows communities to rail. When a railroad abandons a rail line, like happened when I was at Crest, remember the trestle that went across Young's Bay
yes.
and connected into Warrenton?
Went all the way to Seaside.
Yeah, and the railroad abandoned that section of the line, and when they abandon it, all of the property reverts to the adjacent property owners and all the infrastructure is ripped out. And we sat and watched a connection from Astoria to Seaside just be abandoned and go and be privatized. And, you know, that was an opportunity lost. And we weren't going to let that happen again, at least if I could help it, not on my watch. So under the National Trails Act, cities or not-for-profits can negotiate with the railroad to, in essence, put the corridor in the bank. They call it rail banking. Mm-hmm. So the corridor is protected. It's intact. It doesn't revert to private ownership. And you can go from rails to trails, which is what we've done. But there's also instances, and this is the reason they do it conceptually, is there's places around the country where the economy changes. There's reason for rail to come back. And you can see trails go back to rails. Mm-hmm. So in essence, we're the caretaker of a corridor that extends through our town. But if rail ever wants to come back, then we control the corridor now in this negotiation so we can, because there's plenty of places where there are rails with trails. But again, because we were able to rail bank the line and control it, and then over 15 years, as you recall, because I think you built portions of it. But, you know, inch by inch, you know, we do block by block by block, and because we couldn't afford to do the whole thing. But today it extends from the tip of Smith Point out by the port all the way to Tongue Point and loops through the Alderbrook community. And it's the one thing I think that for Astorians is really, when you go there, you see Astorians on the Riverwalk. I mean, it's, and then the trolley came after that. And then you saw docks on 12th and the Wet Dog. You know, what used to be the backside in abandoned buildings suddenly became places where there were businesses. And it really, that, I think, combined with the initiative on the Liberty Theater, combined with what Chester Tribuco was doing with the Elliott Hotel, downtown really started to turn. And it was just fun to watch that process.
Well, you helped the process.
Yeah, I think being at the right place at the right time. And one thing in Astoria, and working with Willis Van Dusen, the mayor, who's been the mayor for 26 years or a long time, but we've always had, in all of my tenure with the city, we've had great mayors. I only knew Edith Hengsgard and Willis as mayors. Really great councils and good city managers. So, you know, when an idea comes up like, hey, riverfront access, rails to trails, it would have been very easy for the political leadership to say, no, you know, we're an industrial city. We need to preserve that railroad and, you know, it's not for people. Same thing on the mill pond. You know, when the mill went out of business and there was a contaminated site, and I remember proposing to the city manager at the time, who was Bob DeLong, that really it's a public responsibility. We ought to do something here. Had the city manager, to me as a department head, said, are you crazy? Do you know how expensive that's going to be? Do you know how difficult that's going to be? It wouldn't have happened. But we've always had council, a city council, mayor, and leadership, I think, that didn't shy away from hard.
Well, regarding
problems.
The mill pond, somehow you managed to talk the DEQ into coming down and cleaning up all the contaminants there before it was developed.
Yeah, that was a partnership. We split the cost of that, but that's before the term brownfields was really coined. That was in the now it's a common term. Contaminated sites are called brownfields. Back then, the state of Oregon was looking for a partner to really do a demonstration project, and they were totally intrigued by the fact that there was this rural little. It wasn't Portland. It wasn't Gresham. It wasn't Eugene. It was Astoria. And they actually had a partner, and they had people with their act together. And so they were excited to actually partner with us. And it really is what made the thing happen.
I remember they brought that big machine down that would burn the soil and cook the hydrocarbons out of the soil, make it usable. But the soil was so hot that the machine caught fire.
Yeah.
It burned the machine up. They had to haul it out of here.
That's true. That was a million-dollar machine, and the soil was hyper-contaminated. And, you had a flash burn, and it burned the thing up. They had to bring a new one.
Well, we're getting kind of toward the end of the show here. It's been fascinating talking with you, Paul. You're on your way to Piedmont. And the thing that I forgot to ask was your wife, Connie, what's she going to do down there?
Last time we were down there, she got a part-time job, and she joined a hiking group. This time, what we did last time is we kept ourselves a little too busy with work and didn't really take advantage of what California had to offer when you look at Sonoma, Napa, Yosemite. So this time, actually, we're planning to take, you know, smell the roses a little bit. I mean, I'm going to work hard, obviously, but she's really looking forward to exploring the area. And plus, our son and grandson, you know, August, he's just turned a year old, and my son and his wife are pregnant with a second. So we're going to have two grandkids down there. I think she'll have plenty to do.
Cool.
So will I. And we'll be back here, too, where we're not selling our Astoria home.
Well, we've got about a minute left, and it's been a fascinating conversation. I could keep going for another 3 or 4 hours, Paul, but we're running out of time.
Yeah, I'm running out of time, too. But thank you. Thanks for having me here.
You've got 30 seconds to come up with your final word for the city of Astoria.
Oh, you know, I'm never good at that on the spot, not silver tongue like you. But like I said, this is a terrific city. I mean, it's been great for me. And and I'll be back. And, you know, I hope people know, again, I've experienced this because I've been in working with the city, but the city staff and city leadership are really committed to making this place the best it is. And
yeah, it's worked.
And it's worked. And it'll keep working. I think, you know, people are engaged and they can trust, but together I think it's, you know, someone's going to take on from me and have a whole new set of great ideas. It's
Paul
been the
Benoit,
tradition here.
Thank you very much for joining us here on Friday, and wish you well in Piedmont.
Thanks, Jim.
And I look forward to you coming back home.
Thank you.
When you're done there.
I'll find you.
Next week we'll be visiting with Drew Herzog from the City Council. And following this show, Albert Smith and his always wonderful Friday Folks. So urge you to stick around, folks. Thank you.